We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
IB Nation, welcome back to another edition of the Irish Breakdown Podcast. It is Monday. I'm with that dude, Sean Davis. I'm Brian Driscoll, owner, publisher of Irish Breakdown. Kind of Mr. Do-It-All over here, Sean Davis. We're ready to rock and roll today, Sean. It's the late March, of course. Notre Dame started spring ball, so not a lack of information to discuss. Lots come up since we last did a show on Friday. And that's what's great about having a Monday mailbag, because we can get caught up on all the stuff from the weekend, plus any other thoughts that people have. Here's where we're at. If you have questions about Notre Dame football, if you have questions about Notre Dame women's basketball, tip off today at 2:15. Kickoff. I'm always in football mode, Sean. Always. Tip off today at 2:15. Big game against Ole Miss. You can ask about that. Ask about recruiting. If you want to talk college football in general, if you want to talk about the draft, whatever stuff you want to talk about, we're going to talk about today, Sean. And so I'm ready to get right into it. You ready to rock and roll, Mr. Davis?
I am, man. How was your weekend?
It was good. It was good. Busy, very busy. We moved out of that house that we were renting, so no more, you know, off-location spots. I'm going to be here for the next week or so, and then they're supposed to be done with the house on Monday, and then I'll be able to move back into the old office. I miss the old office, man. I really do.
Yeah.
So get moved back into there, and then obviously – trying to talk everyone off the ledge of the Riley Leonard situation. I know we're going to have questions about that. I put a post up on the board about that. Yeah, put a couple breakdowns this weekend, some Mike Denbrock offense breakdowns. And so those are on the board, and I'll have some more coming up this week, man. So it's a grind, but I love it. I love it. Wouldn't want to be doing anything else right now. So, but I'm ready to rock and roll, man. And we got lots of questions. And Wyatt Fritz starts us off, Sean, and he comes big picture. So we got to bring it, man. Question one, we got to be ready to bring it.
Let's go.
Football season may be over, but the action on the floor is heating up. Whether it's tournament season or the fight for playoff home court, there's no shortage of high-stakes basketball moments this time of year. Get in on the excitement with Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app, where you can turn your hoops knowledge into some serious cash. Prize Picks is the largest daily fantasy sports platform in North America. We are the easiest and most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. It's just you against the numbers. Instead of battling thousands of other players, including pros and sharks, you pick more than or less than on 2 to 6 player stat projections and watch the winnings roll in. You can now win up to 100 times your money on Prize Picks with as little as 4 correct picks. You heard it. 4 correct picks. You can turn $10 into $1,000 with NBA, NHL, and college basketball entries today on Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app. It is so easy to use. All you have to do is download the app in the App Store or Google Play Store, sign up, add some funds, and you're in. Then you just find your favorite player and decide more or less on the suggested stat. It really is that easy. The night I joined, I picked Hannah Hidalgo to have more than 14 points, Maddie Westbeld to have less than 10 rebounds, and Marcus Burton to have more than 18 points. And guess what? I hit on all three. Bing, bang, boom, baby. Money in my pocket. It was just that easy. Download the app today and use code IRISH for a first deposit match up to $100. Again, download the app today and use code IRISH for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
White Fritz, thank you for the mailbag. Are there any changes as a university athletic program that Notre Dame needs to make to go to the next level? Stadium capacity increase, facilities upgrade, etc.
Sean, I'm good with the stadium. Notre Dame's in like a different situation like Penn State and Ohio State because it's a smaller school. It's a northern part of the state instead of like central state. It's a smaller state than Pennsylvania and Ohio, and it's just a different type of fan base. So they don't need a 100-seat stadium. I think the and you've been in the stadium, Sean. When this is a good football team that's playing well, that place rocks. You know, I mean, when they played Miami in 1988, Miami was, you know, they had to remember when they had to warn the crowd, need you to be quiet, it's too loud. Yeah. Did that against Michigan that same year in 88. Mm-hmm. That's 59,000 people. If the product is good enough and the team's playing well enough, that place is going to be plenty loud. Trust me. I think the layout of the stadium is good. I you know, there's always little things you can do here and there. You know, I'd like to see them put Notre Dame and Irish in the end zone, but that stuff doesn't impact winning and losing. That's an aesthetic thing. If you want to talk about things that are going to help them go to the next level, to me, it's here's where it comes down to. When you talk about facilities, the Goob needs to get renovated, and that's been in the works now for a little bit. I would assume that they're going to share soon kind of what the plan is for that. We've been hearing a lot of things along those lines, so that'll come out. That's an upgrade that's needed. They need more meeting space. They need more places for the players to gather. They need places where the players can eat and spend more time together and those type of things, and that the program, all the athletics programs, if it's just football or if it's all athletes, I don't really care either way, but where they can kind of better facilitate what the meals are for all meals. Mm-hmm. Breakfast, lunch, dinner, snacks, all those kind of things. So like when Emil Wagner talks about how he's consuming 8,000 to 9,000 calories a day, every single one of those calories should be able to be determined and dictated and provided by the football program. That's a need. The weight room could stand to use a little bit of an overhaul because you're going to a program that's a little bit different in emphasis. I'm sure there's some things that Coach Landau is going to want, or Lando is going to want, in regard to, hey, we need a little, maybe we have this, but we have three of them, but we need eight of them because of the emphasis. Maybe a little bit more room for him to work out and run guys. You know, they got that little workout area that could be maybe expanded a little bit. So there are some things along those lines that I think could help the program. But the biggest thing to me, Sean, is there's nothing more important than manpower, right? And that's kind of where I'm at. So making sure that Marcus Freeman has the resources and the budget provided to him to say, hey, if you need to go get some Gary Patterson or David Cutcliffe or somebody like that to come be a part of your program, if you need two, three additional analysts on each side of the ball, if Chad Bowden needs more people, you know, at his disposal from a, you know, the recruiting part, I think they're doing a pretty great job with that. That staff's been built up pretty good with Dre Brown now taking over Chad's job, which, to be honest, Dre had been doing this for a while. Chad had been doing what he got promoted to for a while. Now it's about paying them correctly and giving them the titles correctly. So Dre wasn't some like just assistant. He was at first, but Sean, you and I know over the last 6 to 8 months, Dre's taken on a much more prominent role as Chad has also taken on a more prominent role. This is just more recognizing that. And then they've got a lot of people under them that really do a great job, you know, with the recruiting operation. I mean, if they need a couple people there, but this is also about, you know, giving more help to Chad and Matt Jensen and those guys in regard to national scouting of rosters for the transfer portal, you know, more resources to say, hey, look, we've got some unique needs from an academic standpoint because we're bringing in two things. Number one, more transfers. Number two, more early enrollees. Maybe they, you know, maybe Adam Sargent's staff and academics could use a couple people on the football side of things to help them. And that's their objective. You know, obviously more things related to, you know, mental health of all the things that kids have to deal with. Sean, you know, you and I played ball back in the 90s. We played high school ball in the 90s. My college career finished in 2000. We had things we had to worry about and stress about, but I couldn't imagine being a college football player at any level, especially this level, and having to deal with social media. And I know they grew up on it, but they're exposed to so much more. The expectations are so much greater to be pulled in different directions, you know, doing things to make sure that nobody's falling through the cracks as best as possible. Falling through the cracks. So I think the mental health piece is something I've talked about for years can be improved. And from what I understand, it is being improved. I just think there's always room to focus on making it better. But they're doing so many more things the last few years. Like, what's the lady's name? Is it like, I think it's Anna Applegate or something like that, Anita, something like that. I see her all the time. Like, you know, she's doing these things like teaching kids how to cook and prepare. Like, that's great stuff. Yeah. I love that they're doing that because we're trying to develop young men, right? And so a lot of these kids are living off campus. Being able to teach them how to cook, what are proper cooking techniques, what are ways to eat healthy, those are all great things because we're not just filling up their bodies and nourishing their bodies to become better football players. You know, we're teaching these kids things that, you know, in 10 years when Xavier Watts or 15 years when Xavier Watts is, you know, an NFL player, he's going to be married by then, he'll have kids by then. And he's going to be sitting there making his kids dinner, and it's going to be things he learned doing this. Xavier may be a bad example because from what I'm told, Xavier already liked to cook a lot when he came here. But there's other kids who've never cooked a thing in their lives, and they're now being taught things that someday they're going to be using those things as fathers and husbands and things along those lines. So all those things are great. It's just more of it, more of it, more of it. You know, making sure that the training program is tops in the country. I'm talking about athletic training, not strength training, but the athletic training, Rob Hunt and his crew, making sure that you've got the best people there. At the end of the day, I think that's a lot of what it boils down to, Sean, is if you got somebody that's good at their job, go find somebody that's great at their job and make sure that Marcus Freeman and Pete Bavak, whoever else that makes those decisions, has the resources needed to go get the best of the best. We saw them do that with the coaching staff this offseason, which is why Mike Dembrock is here now, which is why Mike Mickens didn't leave, which is why Dylan McCullough didn't leave, which is why Al Golden didn't leave. There was a substantial financial commitment that Notre Dame made to the football program this offseason to show they're serious about winning. But that's got to be the start, right? Now it's okay, coaching staff here. Now let's build out from it. I think on top of the Goog upgrades, those are the biggest things that need to be done in order to say, hey, Notre Dame's going to take the next step. Basically, whatever Marcus Freeman needs, he needs to be able to explain why he needs it, show evidence that this is going to benefit the program, and then do what you got to do to make it happen.
It's a lot of plans in life, but they can't come to manifestation unless there's proper execution and unity. And one of the biggest things that gives Notre Dame fans hope, or should give Notre Dame fans hope, is exactly what you just talked about. It seems like for the first time in a while, you get the feeling that everyone's pulling in the same direction. Administration, coach, support staff, players, everybody's of the same mindset with the same singular goal. And that is getting to that mountaintop and hoisting that trophy once again and bringing it back to South Bend. That's what we've been waiting for over 30 years. And that feeling and that buzz is starting to come back. Even at the pro day, I remember I telling you, like, yo, it was fantastic. Like, the experience was fantastic. The support staff was fantastic. The way they handled things, the way they dealt with certain things. And just watching the coaches come in the midst of a big-time recruiting weekend and the way they would talk, man, Mike Denbrock was, look, that dude lights up a room when he comes in, man. I mean, from the first time he walked in.
Charismatic 60-year-old you're ever
I mean, he walked over to the media, walked over to us on the bleachers, sup, spoke to everybody. It was almost like every scout in the room was just drawn to him. He held court the entire time he was there. And when you start to get characters or young, not young men, but people like that in the building, charismatic, because Marcus Freeman can't be the only one that carries that torch of being charismatic within the program. He needs others. And you would love for the positional coaches, support staff, recruiting. Chad is that guy. Dre is charismatic. Right. So it's like you're starting to see that permeate throughout the program. And I love the fact that it seems like every time I'm in the building, Pete Bavak was there. Like every time there's a practice, pro day, you see Pete Bavak. That's refreshing, right? So it's a lot to, feel good about.
Let's be, let's be real about something, Sean. Let's be real about something. Okay, 10 years ago, this offseason would have gone like this. Mike Denbrock doesn't get hired. Kirby Moore doesn't get hired because they wouldn't have stepped up enough to hire him. Who knows what would happen at OC. Mm-hmm. Mike Mickens probably leaves for a co-DC job somewhere, and Al Golden probably leaves. Chad Bowden probably heads to Michigan because Notre Dame wouldn't have stepped up to the plate to not only pay him more, but create a new position that's outside of what they've traditionally had. And Dre Brown would have already been gone. Mm-hmm. Because somebody else would have recognized this. So like the thing, like Chad gets a lot of the attention and he should. Chad kills it, right? He is the perfect complement to Marcus Freeman. But what I respect about Chad is Chad realizes it can't just be me. He recognized something in Dre and made sure that the upper higher up said, yeah, you need to take care of me, but we also need to do this because we need to make sure we can keep Dre around. Mm-hmm. Because Chad understands, I believe, that yes, I'm great at this, but if I can have me plus this dude, plus this staff, plus this, we can rock and roll. And you're seeing Notre Dame as an institution because Marcus Freeman can want this all he wants. Jack Swarbrick can want this all he wants. But if you're not getting the support from every aspect of it, Jack Swarbrick can't walk in and demand $30 million extra dollars a year to the budget. Right. Marcus Freeman can. Well, he can. I mean, he's going to get it. Marcus Freeman could demand it. I mean, he's going to get it. And so you're seeing a greater commitment from the school as a whole. And look, and I want to give credit where credit is due, because in the past I've crushed them for it because I don't think they've shown the support. So now that they're doing it, let's show them some love for it. Mm-hmm. Because this offseason would have gone completely differently 10 years ago, completely differently 10 years ago. Part of it, I also believe, is because the school believes they have a coach that's truly committed to Notre Dame. That's part of it as well. Well, am I going to commit this to you? And then a year later, you're going to take an NFL job? Who knows if it may happen, but there's nothing about Marcus Freeman. Like the whole Alabama thing, every coach that was associated with that, except for one, used that to get a pay raise. The one that didn't, Marcus Freeman, because he doesn't want to present to anybody the thought that I'm leaving.
That's a good point.
If I go win, I'll get that money. But I need that money right now, not for me. I'm doing all right. I need to make sure that I can go get Mike Denbrock. I need to make sure I can keep Mick with me. I need to make sure I can keep Chad. I need to make sure I can keep Golden. I need to make sure I keep Dre. And I think there's this belief at Notre Dame where it's such a sigh of relief that after 10 years of every offseason, the threat of I'm going to leave if I don't get something, it's refreshing to have a coach that's like, dude, this is where I want to be. This is where I want to win.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he portrays. I mean, look, I can't tell the future, Sean. I have no clue if that a year from now he's going to walk. I have no idea, but I'm telling you, everything he does right now shows everyone on campus, if you commit to me, I'm committing to this place because I think we can do something special here. And I also think what you're seeing, and we can't ignore, is like there was another one somebody brought up, A&M. I know for a fact that Texas A&M reached out to Marcus Freeman. And there were people at Texas A&M that were telling people, yeah, Marcus Freeman expressed interest. And he's like, no, I didn't. Like, no interest. It never got to me. My agent handled that because my agent knows what I want. And it ain't that, right? You know what I mean? So we're seeing all of that. But we're also seeing the fruits and rewards of the new TV contract that is double, close to tripling what they were making before. So your budget's going to be bigger now because you're going to be bringing in more revenue. So I've tried to explain this the other day, Sean. When you look at the money they're going to be making from the college football playoff, the new NBC extension, what they're getting from the ACC, and what they're getting in the new apparel deal, even if you take out the ACC and it goes away, Notre Dame has almost tripled what their annual revenue was from TV money because of what's happened with the playoff. I mean, they were handing out $460 million a year on the playoff prior to this. The new contract that starts in a couple years is going to give out $1.3 billion. And the number you all are seeing floated around about the $13 million, that's only what Notre Dame makes if they don't make it.
Mm-hmm.
If they make it, from what I'm told, they actually make much greater. Closer to what the SEC and Big 12 schools are making it, or Big 10 schools. So that's the other thing, too, is I was nervous about, okay, they're going to get this big TV deal, but what are they going to do with it? We're seeing what they're going to do with it. And it's exciting because I think you finally have people that, to me, make it seems like we understand that if we invest here, our ROI is going to be so much greater because we're going to go out and win, and the money's going to be flowing. Because here's what happens every time a team wins a championship. Revenue through the entire school grows. More applications to school. That's just a proven fact. Every time a school wins a championship, especially one that you're not expecting, you see these other jumps in revenue, admission requests, campus visitors, money people are willing to spend on all types of things. It happens all the time. They understand that. Plus now our value, because here's the thing that's interesting. Here's where Notre Dame is also smart, Sean. They didn't sign a new TV contract.
Mm-hmm.
They simply signed a 5-year extension at a greater amount, which means Notre Dame right now is investing in the product in hopes that in 5 years, we are a championship caliber team. Because in 5 years, because the last year, Notre Dame was going through contract negotiations. Who else was going through contract negotiations? The Big Ten and the SEC. In 5 years, when that contract comes up, what contract is going to be on the table? There's one game in town at that point in time, Sean, and it's Notre Dame. And if Notre Dame is supporting the football team now, give me $5-10 extra $1 million to do this, and Marcus Freeman builds a winner, imagine what their value then will be in 5 years when that extension is ready to be negotiated. Or a new deal is ready to be negotiated. So there's a lot going on here beyond just they want to support Marcus Freeman. Mm-hmm. They want to support Marcus Freeman because they understand the opportunity that's there from a football standpoint, but also a financial standpoint of this thing working out. And so that's why we're seeing all of this stuff. And that's why making sure that we're making these changes, we looking at it from their standpoint, is something that's been so important to them. That's the big thing.
Tyler Evans, thanks for the super chat. Is there any trades from your favorite teams that you dislike, minus Ken Griffey Jr. to the Reds, still gets me upset.
So, Tyler, I got to ask, are you a Reds fan or a Mariners fan? Because here's – Sean, I grew up a Reds fan, but I also loved Ken Griffey Jr. because I grew up with his dad, was part of the Big Red Machine, you know what I mean? Yeah. And so – love. And I mean, if you were a kid that was alive in the 90s and you liked baseball like we did, how did you not like Ken Griffey Jr.? He was one of the most likable superstars I've ever seen in my life. You know, like, and he was in an era where there were so many unlikable superstars in Major League Baseball. You know, Alex Rodriguez, Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens. You know, there are just a lot of unlikable stars. Mark McGwire wasn't unlikable. He was just kind of blah.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then you have this young, full of energy, phenomenal talent. And it was just like he was super likable. So he said he's a Mariners fan. That makes total sense. So as a Reds fan, who also was a huge – I had two favorite players in the 90s and early 2000s. It was Barry Larkin for my team and Ken Griffey Jr. So when they made that trade to get Ken Griffey Jr., man, I couldn't have been happier. Couldn't have been happier.
Man, I was jealous of you guys when you had the Nasty Boys at the back end of the bullpen.
Oh, yeah. That's when they won at 90. Yeah,
with Sabo and – Eric Davis, man,
That team had some good players, man. You had the Nasty Boys, but you also had Jose Rijo. That was before the injury set in. Tom Browning was still, you know, good pitcher. Yeah, Danny Jackson was going through a period of time. You had Barry Larkin at shortstop. Chris Sabo was a year removed from winning the Rookie of the Year. Right? You had Eric Davis was still playing. They had Paul O'Neill was their starting right fielder on that team. You had a really nice two-man – and they had a really nice two-man rotation at second base and first base that helped that team a ton. You had Hal Morris and Todd Benzinger at first base, and they would switch. And then you also – people forget this. They had Bill Dorn and Mariano Duncan was their two second basemen.
Right.
Right? Like those were two still good – they were older, but they were really good players. And so, man, that team was fun to watch, dude. And they just – I mean – they weren't that great before. They weren't great. They were good, but they were never that good. It just, everything kind of came together. Rijo was healthy that year. It all worked out. But so I love that one. I'd say, I'm trying to think of the trades that I disliked from my teams going outward. I mean, I don't know that most of the trades that have, just generally speaking about the Reds, I hate for one of the reasons I stopped being a Reds fan is because every year I'd be like, get excited about all these young prospects they add. And then as soon as those guys get good, they trade them away for more young guys. Mm-hmm. So like, you know, you get Sonny Gray and you sign him and you then trade him. You get Luis Castillo in a trade with the Mariners. Then you build him up and then it's just like, dude, I'm out. Like I'm done with all this. So that was kind of the thing that got me kind of just over it was this. Like, this is the life of a small market team. But man, I can't really think of any trades like the Celtics made when I was a kid that I didn't like or that the Reds made that I didn't like. I didn't love it when they traded away Dave Parker. I kind of liked watching Dave Parker as a kid. But other than that, I'm more focused on the trades that they did that I liked. You know, and then the big regrets I had as a fan were not the trades. I still say this. Larry Bird's career goes completely differently at the end if Lynn Bias doesn't die. Because that would have taken a lot off of his plate in 88, 89, 90, where he didn't have to carry it. But then also in 88, because the Celtics were really good in 87, like really good until late in the year when he had all those injuries. And like he would have helped with that. 88, same thing. He would have helped take some of that regular season burden off. And then if somebody does go down, you got this cat. And I think you'd have seen them do things where he would have played the wing. You'd have seen Bird as Bird got older, kind of play that early stretch four type of role. And it would allow them to just have a better rotation and kept those guys fresh. But that was the only thing that happened that you look back and you're like, dang it. Cause you can't say, I wish they would have drafted somebody else. Cause that was like the perfect guy for them. And then when Bird retired, you'd have had the perfect star to take over. With all due respect to Reggie Lewis, you'd have had the perfect star to take over. That was the one that crushed me. Was when he died.
Yeah, it was tough. That was really tough. For me, it's emotional, right? I don't think I have emotional. Like trading away Frank Thomas, the Bulls traded Derrick Rose. These are just emotional attachments to players, right? That you just didn't like. Looking back, hindsight, trading Jimmy Butler for Zach LaVine and watching Jimmy Butler become what he's become for the Miami Heat has been tough. And that's pretty much it. Free agency more like letting Wilbur Marshall go in free agency off that 85 yeah. Bears defense when I was a kid, like watching him pretty much dismantle, you know, the linebacking core. Otis Wilson goes to the Raiders and they brought in Jim Morrison. They brought in Ron Rivera, you know, who were good players, but they weren't those guys, you know? So, I mean, yeah, you know, when you're a fan of a team, you have an emotional attachment. Like I'm sure Tyler had an emotional attachment to Ken Griffey Jr.
How would you not? Yeah, I had an emotional attachment to him, and he wasn't even on my team.
Yeah,
I can only imagine what it was like for the Mariners, and they didn't have a history of being that.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, like now I'm preparing myself to lose Luis Robert in a couple of years. The White Sox aren't going to pay him.
Right. Not. That's how everybody's like. You should get excited about the Reds. They got this guy, Indy De La Cruz. Where I'm like, why? Why should I get excited about that guy? So in 2 years, when it's time for him to get paid, he mm-hmm. can go sign with the Yankees or somebody or get traded away. Why should I invest in that? That's why I stopped, you know, because like the Reds have done a great job finding these young Latin players and making these trades and all this kind of, and it's just like, and then they get up and it's like, okay, we never really get to see them in their prime because they get traded away. So it's just like, whatever, I'm over it. But you know, another one, Sean, remember back in the day when free agent NFL, they had a lot of that stuff you could match. And I remember the Broncos signed Tim Brown to an offer sheet. And this is back when you're just begging to get John Elway a wide receiver.
Mm-hmm.
And the Raiders matched it. I was crushed. Because, like, I'm a Notre Dame fan. So, like, I'm an Elway fan. I'm a Notre Dame fan. Elway needed a receiver. Tim Brown was a beast back then. That was crushing when that one happened. That would have been a lot of fun.
Yeah.
A lot of fun.
Have you had any transfers? In this new era, have there been any transfers of guys that you were like, man, I really wish that kid would have stayed in Notre Dame?
Phil Dracovic.
Okay.
Not that, like, would have stayed and they would have developed him properly is mm-hmm. always one. Just because I still say, people, well, he was a bust. Yeah, he turned out to be one.
Mm-hmm.
But you go watch him play in 2020 and you're like, that's for a brief time in 2020. You're like, that's what
when he first got to Boston College. Yeah,
that's what he should have been.
Yeah.
And should have been that at Notre Dame, you know, some choices Notre Dame made and some choices Phil made kept him from ever being the guy that he was supposed to be. That's really the only one that stung. I never understood why Arnold Ali transferred back after 88. I never understood that one.
Mm.
Cause he came in as a freshman and played a bunch at outside linebacker that year and then transferred. But like, I wasn't crushed when Dorsey Levin's transfer because he never did anything. That's how loaded they were at running back. And I wasn't crushed when Kent Graham transferred because I was like, he didn't fit what they do anyway. You know what I mean? So, like, even in, like, modern times, I don't know that there's been one that I was like, man, that sucked. Like, I didn't want Tobias to transfer and Chris Tyree to transfer, but I understood it. So, it's like, it is what it is. Let's see what they do. So, I can't really think of anybody that like that just really – well, here's one. I still wonder what Greg Olsen would have been like at Notre Dame.
Mm.
That's one. Because he came here because of his brother. And then once his brother left, once Christian left, Greg was like, I'm out. And, you know, he could have.
Yeah.
He could have done some things, buddy, at Notre Dame. There's no doubt about that.
No. Aaron Lynch.
Yeah. The reason that one isn't me for Sean is because I knew the reasons why.
Mm-hmm.
And you just kind of knew that maturity wasn't there for him to be the player he was going to be here.
Yeah.
He had been given so many chances to get his head on straight, and he still refused in the NFL.
Yeah.
But I want to finish wrapping up on the Greg Olsen one. Remember, Greg Olsen's last 2 years in college were 05 and 06. That's why I keep saying, like, could you imagine?
Mm-hmm.
Greg Olsen on those two teams with Brady Quinn.
Yeah.
Whew. That'd have been fun to watch, man.
Yeah.
That'd have been real fun to watch.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
I am Benami. Thank you for the super chat. I know everyone has a shot, but be honest. Do you guys actually think someone besides Steve will be quarterback too? Open competition sounds good, but I think it'll automatically be Steve. Appreciate the mailbag.
That's a good question, Sean. Did you get a chance to watch the press conference from Saturday?
I did.
So I followed up on this, but the way he said the question, he was like, Steve's going to be with the ones, Kenny's going to be with the twos. And it just kind of seemed like he was like, this is how it is for the spring.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't like that. So I followed up with it, and his answer I didn't like either. I mean, look, I'm just going to call it. I love Marcus Freeman and what he's doing at Notre Dame, but my job is to call him like I see him. And I didn't like that answer. And somebody else asked about this in the chat, and they said the same thing. They asked kind of the same thing. And I'll be honest, it did not seem like they had any thought of, okay, let's let them battle. It's maybe this is just what they're saying publicly, and that's not really what's going on behind the scenes. But his words, and he kind of said it twice, and he's like, you know, I love competition, blah, but his answer didn't sound to me like, oh, yeah, there's going to be legitimate competition. Well, if Steve's only getting one reps and Kenny's only getting two reps, and then when there's a time when you don't have a third and you're splitting Kenny and CJ, how is that a real competition? A real competition is, okay, Kenny's getting reps these next couple days with the ones. CJ's with the twos, Steve's with the threes. The next couple days, okay, let's get CJ some work with the ones. Steve's with the twos and Kenny's with the threes. Like, that's a real competition. And the problem I have, and again, this is just based on what we're being told. It could be completely different in actuality because we're not there, is that you can't say I love competition in one breath and then not do things to actually create competition. Because this whole notion, well, they can do that with the twos. No, they can't. Mm-hmm. You can say that all you want, but when I'm playing behind what you perceive to be your second best group of linemen, your second best group of running backs, and your second best group of receivers, you're not giving me the same opportunity as you're giving that guy. Let me go work with that group. Let me go throw to the couple 4-3 guys and see what I can do. Let me be the one handing off to Jeremiah Love and Jadarian Price. Let me be the one to run the offense behind Charles Jagasaw and Billy Shrouth. So that's my thing, is it just in no way did it seem like, hey, you know, competition's still going to rage. Now we're going to see who that next guy is. It's a great opportunity, you know, for these three guys to compete in battle. It's going to be a great opportunity for Steve and Kenny, Kenny and CJ to get a lot of reps and push Steve, and Steve's going to have to battle with them. And that was, I had to kind of like coax that out of him with my question. And even then it was still kind of like not a real conviction that that's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was disappointing to me. So just from the words, it doesn't sound like there's a competition. I think it's a mistake, because when you get sucked into this vortex at quarterback of experience, that's how you get into a situation where a coach decides, no, we're going to play Kelly Bryant all year instead of Trevor Lawrence. And you can't do that, right?
That's interesting you bring up that reference, because I think it's the perfect reference from the angst that was, I don't know if you picked up on this, there was angst about what it transpired with Riley Leonard. Not in the sense of whether or not he's going to be healthy, and I'm not talking about that. I think there was a clear-cut plan. I think all things considered, they do want Riley Leonard to win the job. They do want Riley Leonard to show that he's the guy that's going to lead this offense and be one of the leaders on this team, right? But I think we both have said, well, I know I stepped out and said, Steve Angeli isn't just about to go away. Like Brown's going to have to win this thing. And that's what, in a sense, what I pick up is that the want was Riley's going to win this thing during the spring. He's going to win this thing through the spring. He's going to establish himself. And then sometime early in the fall camp, you know, early in the process, we can go ahead and say, okay, yeah, this is the guy we want to start. This is all things being perfect, right? This is a wrench, right? Because we don't know that in some capacity he could come back this spring. If I'm investing in Riley Leonard, I don't know if I even want to chance anything in the spring.
No,
like, I'm built towards making sure he's totally healthy going into the summer and into fall camp. I'm looking at him as an investment. And not like, yo, we've invested in him. This is what we want him to be. Let's take it easy. But, of course, we'll see how things play out. So I think the angst comes from the wrench in the plans and the thought process and how things were, how they wanted things to evolve in that competition. Now, as far as how the competition plays out, I don't think anybody really considered if there was a competition. I'll say if there was a competition, it was Riley and Steve.
It was, and I don't think there is. I mean, there is no circumstance in which you're going to have Steve Angeli be your starting quarterback over Riley Leonard unless Riley's not healthy. There's no, he doesn't have the physical talent Riley Leonard has. He doesn't have the experience Riley Leonard has. He doesn't have the playmaking ability that none of the quarterbacks do. None of the quarterbacks right now have the proven playmaking ability and talent that Riley Leonard does as a senior. So I never bought the whole there's going to be a – like, did anyone think going into 2021 that anyone but Jack Cohn was going to be the starting quarterback? Of course not. But they still had to give the, you know, quarterback competition, you know, language. Mm-hmm. There was no real quarterback competition. My concern is if they're not even letting there be a competition for number two, that's very potentially damaging. And so, you know, seeing people posited the idea, well, maybe they're doing this so that Steve doesn't leave. Maybe. But are you willing to not risk Steve leaving at the expense of maybe Kenny or CJ leaving? I'm not saying they will. I'm just making the point. They don't feel that they're going to be given. Like, here's my thing. If I'm Kenny or I'm CJ, I'm like, all right, I went through the spring and you gave me no chance to push this guy outside of, well, if you do your job with the number twos or the number threes, you'll get your. That's coach speak, y'all. Coach speak. That's all that is. And if you're telling a player that and you mean that, it means you don't actually think that guy can go start. Not as a quarterback. Mm-hmm. It's a little different as a wide receiver or running back where it's more about you and just you doing your job. But imagine telling a running back who's only working with the third string offensive line that he's getting the same opportunities as the guy with the ones. He's got to take advantage of my opportunities. I'm getting hit every other play behind the line of scrimmage because I'm running with the number three offensive line. What exactly is this opportunity you speak of, mm-hmm. right? And so, to me, if I'm them and you value Steve Angeli's experience of one game in which he threw for 230 yards so much that I get no chance to compete for the job when the projected starter is out, then what's to make me think I'm going to get a legitimate chance next spring to start because I'm still not going to have the experience he has? And so that's where they need to be concerned, in my opinion. Is if you really think Steve Angeli's that guy, then okay, fine, let him be that guy. But that's not anything anyone's ever told me. All I ever get is he's just got a lot of moxie and he's experienced. He's got something we like this. Okay, right? Because like, that's my thing. Is like the Kelly Bryant, Trevor Lawrence thing was this. They gave Trevor time and opportunities to prove himself. And when he proved himself to be ready, they turned it over to him. Would they have turned it over to him if he never got those chances to play early in the season? There was a plan in place to get him ready to go. And to me, that's what they need to do with this group. And I don't know that, like, I hope the lip service is not what's actually happening in practice.
No, I don't
what
think
what he said in the thing is what's happening. That's a problem for me. Yeah, now we're back to the Brian Kelly era of experience trumps everything.
Yeah, verbatim, I don't know. I don't remember verbatim what the answer was. But I will say this. From the first full practice that I was able to see, I mean, you were there too. And he said it in the press conference afterwards. they're not, and he attributed this to Mike Denbrock. Like, dude, we're not doing ones and twos right now. Everybody's getting an opportunity to show what they can do because Mike Denbrock wants to see that.
Right.
Like, I don't, no. I want to see what everybody can do when they're out there best on best. Everybody gets the opportunity. That to me was a full of like, we saw Riley would come out with the ones and then they would go to the next period and Steve would come out with the ones. And Kenny would get some snaps. It's like, so that atmosphere was set up. How it has played out or how it will continue to play out. Like I said, this is a wrench that was thrown into the plan that I thought they had to be able to use the early part of the spring to see what they had from everybody when they have optimal opportunity and then start to trim the fat and start to gear things more towards, okay, these are the guys that we are going to depend on. These are going to be our top guys, but we're going to continue to develop and bring our younger guys. Look, I think from the jump, I've always said, dude, they're not going to put CJ in the midst. CJ, they don't want CJ to be one of their top two quarterbacks unless he forces his way and you can't deny him.
Right.
That's nothing wrong with having a plan. Okay, this is what we would like to do with a kid. This is what we would like to do. If he forces our hand, then we deal with that as time moves on. I don't have a problem with having a plan for a kid in his development and then being able to adjust on the fly based upon what you see in practice. Okay. If he's given the opportunity with, like you said, with ones like,
but like here's the thing, like what was said in that first one. True. He said that, but he said very clearly, Steve's with the ones, Kenny's with the twos, CJ's with the threes. And when we're only doing ones and twos, Kenny and CJ will both play in the twos. Mm-hmm. That's what he said. I mean, he didn't say for tomorrow's practice. He just said, this is the way it is right now. That's what I say. Let's see how it plays out. But that was troubling for me because you can't tell me that after four practices, you've already made your decision that this is how it's going to be. Right. That's very troubling to me because to your point, CJ has to force the issue. But again, it's hard to force the issue when one guy gets to throw to the first team receivers and the first team backs and the first team O-line every practice, and I'm only playing with the threes by myself, and then I'm rotating with the twos. It is not – it's – you know for a fact the minute Trevor Lawrence showed up on campus, they were giving him some opportunities with that first group of guys.
You knew now, when he stepped on campus, he was going to eventually be the starter.
Right. And so to me, you – but you also know that he's got the talent to be that next level guy. And to me, if you're after four practices deciding that Kenny Minchie and CJ Carr aren't that guy, that's a problem. That's a problem for me because quarterback is unlike and some people don't understand this. Well, they play this guy who's a freshman. Guys, quarterback's a different animal than every other position. And some coaches, especially defensive coaches, become obsessed with experience. Why? Because they, in their minds, view experience is less mistakes. That's the thing. Now, this Marcus Freeman could have been given his opinion, and Mike Denbrock has a completely different opinion. And if that's true, then we'll see how it plays out. But I'm just going off of what he said. It was concerning what he said. Mm-hmm. And it's going to make me be very curious about how things play out. Because here's the deal, guys. We're going to get five periods of practice. That's all we're going to get to see, except for like maybe one more. I think we get one more full.
Practice. Yeah.
We're going to have no clue who's working with the ones, twos, and threes after five periods. And if somebody tries to tell you they do know, they're full of it because that's just for drills. We know for a fact, Sean, in the past, they've done things for our benefit that when we talk to our sources after the fact, that's not how it went for us in practice once we were gone. Mm-hmm. Not how it went. So I'm very curious to see how it goes because if this is just it, rest of spring, Steve one, Kenny two, CJ three, that's going to be very disappointing for me. And now, here's the thing. That's not me saying I want Steve benched. That's me saying if Steve's going to be the guy, don't you want to learn a little something about him too? How did Steve handle being down with the threes today? I mean, that's all part of the deal too, is he went down there and he was pouting and stomping around or whatever, and that tells you something. Or it could be he went down with the threes and he got them boys rolling. And he was telling guys what to do, and you learn something about him that way. And so that's kind of my thing is
I think something else he said that was very telling. Look, I don't understand the angst with anything, right? Because if I'm not basing this based upon what was said, this is just me logically. Your young dogs will get more opportunity with Riley Leonard being out. Or they should get more opportunity, more reps. They should come out of this spring a little bit further ahead with Riley Leonard snaps now being divided amongst three or being given to them. So in the totality of the health of the quarterback room should be further ahead.
Should be.
Because should be further yeah. ahead coming out of the spring yeah. than normally the normal expectation, right. which is a bright side.
Absolutely.
To what is happening right now. Now, like we said, we don't know what's going on outside of the one full practice we were able to
correct.
Watch. And correct. I, like I said, based upon what he said after that practice and what we saw, there was opportunity yep. given with the ones.
There will be, and there will be more.
And there will be through. More. Right. If that continues that way, what you're saying is based upon the questions that were answered and how they were answered on Saturday. It's like, man, that's not going along with.
Right.
Because what was previously established. Because
he also said I love competition.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And here's the thing. It could simply be as he was in his mind was only talking about the next practice.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Or the one they just had. Right. I mean, he could have been talking about the one they just had. Steve was with the ones and that's how it was. But that's not what it's going to necessarily be. But in that question, and then how he kind of answered to me, it's like he kind of gave just a little bit of lip service to the fact that, oh, yeah, you know, I don't want Steve looking over his shoulder, but he's got it. And it wasn't like a real thing. So I'm very curious how it's going to play out, because I'd be very disappointed because it would go against. Because here's the thing. If you treat your quarterbacks differently,
mm-hmm.
the rest of the team is going to see that, and it's going to become a problem. You know, and that kind of reared its head a little bit last year. You know, Audric Estime fumbles the ball in the first quarter against Navy, and he sits the rest of the half. You know, your quarterback makes similar mistakes, and it's like you don't even say something to him. Now, I don't think you should bench your quarterback every time he throws an interception, but there needs to be some sort of visible, hey, that's not okay type of thing. And there was a lot of people I talked to last year who felt like you didn't see that. He wasn't mm-hmm. treated that way.
Mm-hmm.
It just kind of let it slide. That's not a Sam Hartman problem.
No.
That's the way that he was coached problem.
Let me ask you a question. Let's just say hypothetically, post Clemson.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they had two games after Clemson?
Yes.
Right?
Wait
and Stanford. Post Clemson. Let's just say Marcus Freeman says, look, we're going to star Steve, and we're going to make sure Kenny gets some playing time.
Right.
How beneficial would that have been going into the bowl prep and then the bowl game? Where are Steve and Kenny, particularly Kenny, along in the progression now, playing in those last two games, right? Getting a taste of that, playing at Stanford on the road, then the bowl prep, and then the Sun Bowl. Like, if he had made that move, which I don't know how many Notre Dame fans after that Clemson game would have been. Notre Dame would have beaten Wake Forest with Steve starting that game.
Oh, they'd have been they would have finished the year 3-0.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's for me, Brian, the big look. There is so much hope, regardless of who you think is going to be the starter. Look, let me put my hands back in my sweater here.
No.
Because I'm getting excited, man. I'm really getting excited. Yeah. I wish this excitement and hope will permeate throughout the fan base. Mm-hmm. 2 years ago, it was Drew and Tyler.
Right.
Last year, it was Tyler and Sam. Now we're right. talking about CJ, Kenny, Steve, and right. Riley. Like, right. what? We are so much help.
Right.
Dude, it's so much to be
to answer your question. About. To answer so your question, hope. I don't know that that would have been great for Steve.
Right.
Because I don't know that Steve would have had as much time to prepare as he did for that. The bowl game.
But Kenny, I want you to speak
for
to him.
Kenny, it would have been yes. huge for him. Yes. And that's why I felt they missed an opportunity in the bowl game not to have a package ready for Kenny to play.
Mm-hmm.
And once you did get a big lead, he should have got in sooner. That's my thing is like, you've got these opportunities to develop a guy, but they're just refusing to do so. Now, maybe it's Gino Gadulli who loves Steve Angeli. Somebody in the chat said maybe, just maybe, Steve Angeli's better than Clint Kenny. He may be. He may be. But that was my point. This isn't just about giving those guys a chance to beat him out. This is also partly about developing Steve, seeing how he handles adversity. Because of injury, Steve's just been kind of thrust into the backup role by default. Let's do some things to kind of challenge him, put him in a tough spot, and see how he responds. How does he respond when he spends the next three practices with the threes because of this plan we have? If he's down there, that's what I said earlier, like, hey, you do this and do that. No excuse making for why they did a pick. Just leading those guys, getting those guys lined up. Let's roll. And all of a sudden, man, it's the best the third team has looked all camp. That tells you something. That was a building opportunity for him. That's the whole point. And so everybody's like, well, you know, this one of the most things that I just wanted to scream and just take my computer and throw it out the window during the Brian Kelly era was when people say, well, the coaches know better. Clearly in practice, like, you don't know how practices work in college football, right? He could go dominate scout team. You're not always allowed to go full speed on defense. And they're telling you where to go more often than not in a way that's beneficial to the other side of the ball. You're not running your defense. You know, I'm a man-to-man corner, but I had to play cover two this whole week. You're not showing me anything that's going to help you earn a spot. Right? That's not how you have to create those opportunities and see how guys handle those opportunities. And sometimes the opportunity you're creating is a negative one because I want to learn how this guy handles adversity. Right? And so I think it would have been huge for Kenny. Obviously Wake is not very good. Stanford's not very good. So Steve may have gone out there and played well, and he would have had like an extra week to prepare because there was a bye coming out of Clemson. So we might have seen the same thing from Steve. Those two games, I don't know. I know that the lack of the way that it played out for Steve in the bowl game was perfect for him to get his first start. You know, but like, here's my thing is, I mean, what if they'd have yanked Sam early against Pitt and given Steve a chance? What would that have done for Sam the next week going against Clemson? Right? Because sometimes it's like you pull your starter because, dude, you need to get your head out of your butt. No, we're not benching you full time, but
that was when he threw the two picks early.
Right. But
one was a bad one.
Not his fault. Rico. The first was on Rico. But there were some other misses in that half where you're just like, dude, this guy's wide open. You need to get your head out of your butt. So let's make this move, you know, and especially if you feel good about Steve's about to go in there and play. Put Steve in there and say, hey man, we're not gonna keep putting up with this, buddy. And then what do you say to Sam going into the Clemson game? It's time for you to get your head out of your butt and go back to being the Sam Hartman that you were back in November or back in September. So those are all parts of this process that you have to be willing to do as a coach, that a lot of coaches aren't willing to do at quarterback. That's what it comes down to. You've got to be willing to say, hey, there is a level of accountability for quarterback, not the way that it may be for other positions, because you also don't want a coach that's constantly screaming at the quarterback, because then that's going to hurt some of the confidence that you have in the quarterback. But people need to know, hey, this guy can't, because like Sam had played so poorly in consecutive games. He played poorly against Ohio State second half. He played poorly against Duke until the last drive. He played poorly against Louisville. He comes out and played okay, played solid against USC. Nothing special, but he didn't have a chance to really do a whole lot against them because of how the defense set them up for such a big early lead. So, and then he comes out and starts poorly against Pitt.
Yeah.
And it's nothing. No accountability, nothing. And from things we heard within the program, there wasn't that butt-chewing that kind of needed to happen to say, hey, man. And there was a lot of people that I talked to that were like, there was frustrations that, hey, I go out and make a mistake and I don't play the next two quarters. And then he doesn't and they don't say anything to him. So those are all parts of it. And you got to be careful that you're not doing that again where it's like, well, here's the order and this is how it's going to be. If they go through the rest of the spring and Steve takes all the prominent reps with the ones and Kenny and CJ with the twos, if I'm those guys, I'm going to ask myself, what am I doing here? If it's just about experience, then I got no chance next year. I'm basically here until it's my turn. I'm not going to get that chance. So that's what they got to be careful of, because maybe in those situations, Kenny and CJ show that they're not ready. But you'll know. Yeah. But you'll know they're not ready. Right now, you're assuming they're not because they're not playing well with the twos and the threes. And I'm telling you guys, it is different as a quarterback working with the twos than it is with the ones. It just is. You know, it's like, hey, people, look how good Steve looked when he came in the game. Okay, flip the script. Put Steve in at the beginning of the game and bring in Sam off the bench against the number twos and see how that goes. Right? I mean, it's a different situation. And so we're going to have to see how it goes. Again, and I'm only responding to what Coach Freeman said. Now let's see what they actually do. And that's why I'm not panicking on it yet, but I do think what he said needed to be addressed. But let's see how it plays out. You know, and it could be mind games too, Sean. It could be what you said. Okay, this is what I'm saying because I want to see how Kenny and CJ are going to react.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see if Kenny comes out the next practice with his head down and unhappy because he just thinks Steve just is getting promoted and I'm still with the twos.
You know,
or does he come out that next practice and say, all right, okay, you want this is my chance. Does he view this window of Riley going down as an opportunity and sees it? Maybe there's some mind games going on. I mean, so that's, in fairness, that could be part of his comments too. It could be my, and you say, why are you playing mind games? Because that's football. It's a mental sport. I need to know how tough you are. I need to know how you respond when things don't go your way. Because how you respond now, when I name Steve the number one now, and you're the number two, how you respond over the next few practices is going to tell me where your mind is, what kind of competitor you are. Because that's going to tell me how you handle us being down 14-0 to begin a game. You may not think it does, Sean, but it does. You know this. I know you know this. Other people may not think that it does. That stuff matters. That's how you learn about how a guy handles it. Because if you can't handle this well, how are you going to handle when we fall behind Ohio State 10-0? Because for whatever you feel about Sam Hartman, you know how he responded when they were down 10-0? Ain't nothing but a thing. I've been here a thousand times.
Look, I want Kenny Mitchell.
Right back at it.
I want Kenny Mitch to be in his dorm room after every practice, licking his fingers. Barbecue chicken. Steve Angeli is barbecue chicken. That's the attitude I want him to have. I want him to salivate for the next practice. Like, I can't wait. I can't wait to show that I'm better. I can't wait. And I want CJ to have the same mentality.
Right.
I can't wait to show I'm better than Kenny and Steve.
Oh, they messed around and giving me an opportunity.
Absolutely. Like
they're going to mess around and get too many reps. You want that.
They didn't want that to happen to Riley.
That's not what we're saying.
That's not what we're saying. That's not what they wanted. But you best believe the moment they found out, if they're who we believe they are, the competitors we think they are, oh, absolutely. Oh, it's absolutely. Blood in the water. Shine, right? Blood in the water.
Right.
Let's go.
So in fairness, that could also be the reason Freeman said what he said. Let's be honest about it. I mean, so if I'm going to say I'm being critical of taking them literally, then I also need to be willing to say, hey, but maybe this is it. And then, but we'll find out. We'll find out to a degree over these next several practices. Boy, if we keep going on this, on these questions, Sean, we're only going to get to about five today. All right, let's get down to here from Riker Ferg.
Appreciate you, Riker Ferg. It would be blank if Shedeur Sanders and Travis Hunter pulled an Eli in the 2025 NFL draft.
Shocking. If both of them did it? I mean, if Shedeur Sanders is the clear number one pick in the draft and he doesn't want to play for the team picking number one, I know the people don't like this. I had no problem when John Elway did it. I was five. I mean, looking back, I had no problem with it. I had no problem when Eli did it. I had no problem when Caleb Williams is trying to do it, because when you have that leverage, this is a business. You have that leverage. Use it to do one of two things. I don't want to go play for them, or to somehow get some commitments for what they're going to do to build around you. Right? That's also part. Hey, look, I'm just letting you know, you can draft me, but I'm not playing for you. Or the first chance I get, I'm out of here. Or, you know, whatever the case may be, use that leverage. So if Shedeur Sanders is in a situation where, you know, Team A is picking number one, and he's the clear number one quarterback, and he doesn't want any part of that franchise, then sure, use that leverage to pull an Eli. It would be understandable if he did it. If Travis Hunter tried to do something like that, I'd be like, because it's a different deal. It's you're not building your franchise around a corner. I don't care how good he is. The last one that was maybe that good enough was Deion Sanders. And let's be real, Deion didn't win anything big until he went to a franchise that had other great players. Football is the ultimate team sport, and no player can elevate an entire team like a quarterback. That's what's different. You could have the best corner in all NFL and have one of the worst defenses in the NFL. You could have a mediocre football team on offense, and you put the right quarterback in there, and all of a sudden they get better. It's just that way because of the way that quarterbacks impact the game. You can avoid a great corner. You can't avoid a great quarterback. Mm-hmm. You just can't. And so it would be understandable if Shador tried that. If he was the clear-cut number one, it would be silly for Travis Hunter to try that in a draft class that has Will Johnson and Benjamin Morrison. And you know what I mean? Like I think I don't even accept the premise that he's even the top corner in next year's draft class. I don't think he's the top one or two corners in his class. I think Will Johnson and Benjamin Morrison are. He gets the hype. He's the best all. You could argue he's the best all around player in college football because there's so few guys that do what he does.
He's both.
And yeah, I would argue he may want to consider exactly. He may want to consider that. Hey, coach, man, look, I think I'm actually better here, so I want to be here full time. I mean, he may consider that, but
first round at both positions, and that's rare. He doesn't have to be the top corner.
I don't think he's a first round corner yet.
Yeah, I would disagree.
I think he can be. But I would agree with you that he's a first round talent at receiver now.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and he's a first round player because we're having the debate whether he is or isn't first round at both spots. There just aren't those kind of guys around. And
I haven't seen the entire clip. I've just seen like clips. I haven't seen the entire interview to get to like the context or if there was more context. But I will say, it's outside of John Elway, who did have a father that was deeply rooted in football and had connections in the NFL. But there's also a point to make that you don't do this unless you have some, like Eli Manning had Archie. It wasn't like Eli was doing it with just a regular, like that's the problem with Caleb Williams. He doesn't have somebody with roots deep in the NFL. Well,
John Elway also had Major League Baseball.
Exactly. I mean,
his dad was a college coach, but that doesn't really do anything. His family couldn't afford. He said, fine, I'll go be, I mean, George Steinbrenner wants me to be the right fielder for the Yankees someday.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I'm going to go do that.
Yeah.
Right. Like you said, Eli had the leverage because of who his family was.
And Shador is going to have an advantage. Look, his dad, everybody was like, what is Deion knew that this quarterback class was stacked. And he knew the next quarterback class was going to be less talented. He knew that. He knew that. Like, son, relax. We're going next year. Next year, you can be that guy.
Right.
All right? And if they come out and perform, if Shador comes out and performs, regardless he's the number one quarterback, number two quarterback, he's going to have leverage because of the position and because of his father.
Correct.
And the connections. It matters. It mattered for Eli.
And because the money he makes.
Absolutely.
Shador makes more, I think, first or second amongst all players in NIL money. I mean, you see him on commercials all the time. So he can say, I don't mind dropping three or four spots to go to the right franchise. I don't need to play for you. I made $10 million the last 2 years in college. And my dad's Deion Sanders. You know what I mean? Like he's bankrolling me my sit out, essentially.
Yeah.
So he has that leverage. And so, again, when we talk about – I know people don't like this. I get it. But this is a business. NFL is legitimately a business. I don't like holdouts, but sometimes I understand that they're needed
to show that
I'm serious. You got to do that. And so
I'm
as long as it's done the right way – like if there's a right way or right reasons and wrong reasons to do this. There's right reasons and wrong – like if you just want to go play in New York – you know, like this good franchise has the number one pick, but you just want to play in New York. You don't have the leverage you think you do in that situation. You know what I mean? But like,
yeah, I think it's about his experience. You pointed it out. He didn't win anything until he got to San Fran. I think he does not want that experience for his son.
He
the Falcons organization wasn't real back then. They didn't want to win. He doesn't want that for his son. He doesn't want it for Trav.
Right. So he understands that there are organizations that can doom you if you go to the wrong place.
Yes.
He understands that. Not even just his own experience, but like even people he may know.
Yeah.
You know, and those type of things. So it would be understandable and smart if Shedeur Sanders did that. It would be a mistake if Travis Hunter did that. Because again, it's just going to be viewed differently, Sean. Quarterback versus corner, clear top guy versus guy that, you know, you know what I mean? Like it just, it's a different animal. It is. It'll be interesting to see if they do. I don't know if this was said or if this is just a hypothetical situation, but it would surprise me. It would surprise me if any of that kind of, if it came to pass with Travis Hunter. It would surprise me. We'll be right back.